Welcome to the Buckmaster Show. It is Wednesday, the 23rd of March, 2011. I am Bill Buckmaster, your host for the Buckmaster Show on this very pleasant, rather cool day in southern Arizona. This might be the last cool day, in fact, till next September. Let's hope not. We are on KJLL AM 1330, and you can always check us out on our fine website, buckmastershow.com. We're live weekday mornings, 9 to 10. We re-air from 7 to 8 in the evening on KJLL. Here's today's lineup, another good one. We lead off with a newsmaker interview with Tucson City Councilwoman Regina Romero. We have lots to talk about. It was a busy council session yesterday. Then we'll talk with Rod Pace. He is the CEO of Rosemont Copper. At the bottom of the hour, what the Border Patrol is doing to prepare for the upcoming hot season in the desert. And we conclude the program with an interview with political pollster Dr. Margaret Kensky. The Buckmaster Show is primarily an interview-driven talk show, but of course there is always room for you, the listeners, with your comments and questions. The Buckmaster Show live line is 529-3508. Among other things, the Tucson City Council gave preliminary approval yesterday for the move to all-mail elections, but will hold a public hearing before finalizing the decision on April the 5th. Currently, the city has a hybrid system in which 46% of all registered voters sign up to receive their ballots by mail in 2011. In the 2009 city election and 2010 general election, about 65% of voters cast ballots by mail. On the Buckmaster Show live line is Tucson City Councilwoman Regina Romero. Hello, Regina.
Good morning, Bill, and thank you for having me on your show.
Well, it's always a pleasure. Do you think it might be easier for all voters to get to cast a ballot this way with an all-mail election?
You know, I think that it's very important to increase participation and save money in these times. And right now, as we've seen our elections and our polling locations dwindle, they've gone from 158, sometimes 160 in the good days, to now the clerk has suggested to have anywhere from 60 to 65. So that in itself is something that that I see as not good, because you're actually shrinking the number of polling locations but not sending a ballot to each and every registered voter. If we were to go to an all-vote-by-mail election, every single registered voter in the city of Tucson would receive a ballot, and they would be able to send it and participate. Other states that have done it, or other cities that have done it, including Oro Valley, Sahuarita, and other cities around Arizona, has seen an incredible turnout increase. And so, you know, we're looking at everything, and we want to hear from the public as to what they think, but I think it's a good idea to increase participation and reduce costs.
So there would be obviously some savings by doing the mail system, but you would have to still, of course, pay the postage for the ballots, but I guess you would save some money.
Right. There would at least be $350,000 of savings based on the city clerk's budget, and there could potentially be some more. The thing is that in terms of polling locations, the clerk's office has to hire temporary poll workers, train them, and then have all of the technical computers and counting equipment and all that at the sites. And that takes money, and there could potentially be more than $350,000 worth of savings. And so we're looking at the pros and cons. I mean, a lot of people say, well, it's tradition to go out and vote, but, you know, 50% of the population approximately in Tucson already votes at home.
You mentioned during the council session that you thought this might be a more secure election system.
Based on what our city clerk, Roger Randolph, has said, is that Every single signature is verified. There is a very impeccable and clear way of counting each and every ballot. Once that ballot is sent by mail to the clerk's office, that piece of mail becomes federal property, and so of course the federal government and the postal carriers, it's very serious for them to be able to turn those ballot into the city. And once it gets to the city, that signature is verified, and it's counted on election day. So, based on what Roger Randolph has talked to the council about, it is a very secure system, and could potentially be, and I know that all city clerks around the nation and recorders around the nation are really moving in the direction of all vote by mail ballots. So it is something that cities around us are already doing, and they've seen a very successful turnouts, and we need to hear from the public. I like the idea. What excites me and what kind of put me into the political process and into being a public servant is voter participation. For me, when I was 18, I first started registering people to vote. I want to see participation and turnout. And so that aspect of vote by mail really excites me.
Okay, it's about 13 minutes past the hour on the Buckmaster Show. We have Tucson City Councilwoman Rahina Romero, and at least once a week we try to talk with one of our council members about what's going on in the city of Tucson. If you'd like to ask Councilwoman Rahina Romero a question, our number 529-3508. Also, there was some action taken on a deal yesterday for senior housing. This is that controversial land flip allowing the Gadsden Development Company to buy a property and immediately flip it to a senior housing developer. That was approved by a 6-0 margin by the council yesterday. Councilwoman Romero, you were quick to defend the deal to the critics who have been against this. Why do you like this deal?
Well, first and foremost, Bill, it is not a flip. That's what the local paper has been calling Rob O'Dell has been calling it. But it's not a flip. A flip would essentially be someone buying a piece of land from the city and then turning around and selling it for more. This is a master development agreement that the city of Tucson signed with Gadsden. The city of Tucson is obligated by law to work with Gadsden to move forward. What they have done as a master developer is they've purchased the land, they've invested in engineering, in hooking up water lines, in hooking up sewer lines, in improving the land so that it could be development ready. And they found the senior housing group, which is a group that received $28.5 million in low-income housing tax credit that they are bringing to Arizona, to Tucson, and they're investing, creating more than 200 jobs in construction and creating senior housing that will be protected, affordable low-income senior housing that will be protected for the next 28 years. And they are spurring development on the west side, a land that for a long, long, long time has been ignored. And they're going to spur up development on the west side. Gadsden is going to build infrastructure. The streetcar is going to be connected to the west side. And hopefully we will start seeing much more mixed use, more affordable and workforce housing, retail, commercial. And all of that is good for the economy, it's good for the neighborhood, and it's good for the city of Tucson. I've said many, many different times, for many different hours, please present the real facts and the real story. But that doesn't get into the stories on the paper. And so it has been maligned, it has been vilified, but the real story is that the Gadsden Group went through the request for proposals in an open process, was the winner of the process, and the city of Tucson is working with them.
So the
offering incentives, we are offering incentives. Way before I got to the council, staff and the neighborhood said we need to provide incentives to this project because nobody wants to build on the west side.
So the bottom line is there'll be a 143-unit affordable housing project on that land south of West Congress.
The bottom line is 143 units for seniors will be built, $28.5 million spent in the local economy, providing 200 jobs for local contractors and subcontractors, and spurring economic development on the west side. I don't see where the fall is on this. I think the taxpayers are well protected. If Gadsden Group does not perform on this first phase, they are out of the deal. And the land is still the city of Tucson.
Got about 1 minute to go. I understand metal detectors are now up at the city council chambers. Are you comfortable with the way that's going with this new security system?
I think if the chief of police feels comfortable with that type of protection going in at the doors of City Hall, then I think I feel comfortable. I think it's not only mayor and council that should be protected in that hall, but it should also be the public. As we saw January 8th, it's not only, you know, the elected officials that are at danger, but it's also the people around them that want to participate in democracy that could be in danger. And so if our chief of police feels comfortable with that tactic, and he's the one that chooses the security for City Hall and for mayor and council, then I feel okay. I feel comfortable. We all want to make sure that everyone that walks into that hall to say, to talk to council and to give us their opinion should feel comfortable being there.
Rahina Romero, thank you for being on the Buckmaster Show.
Thank you so much, Bill. I really appreciate it. The time always flies when I'm talking to you.
I know. We didn't have a chance to get into bus fares, but we'll talk about that next time.
Hopefully. Hopefully. Thank you so much, Bill.
Okay. Stay with us. It's about 19 minutes past the hour.
The Arizona Inn is the only Tucson hotel named by Travel and Leisure magazine as one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. Located in Midtown, close to the University of Arizona, the Arizona Inn is located at 2200 East Elm Street and on the web at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn maintains AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room, with Chef Allison serving up breakfast, lunch, and dinner daily, with a featured menu and seasonal favorites. And because the Arizona Inn is listed on the National Register of Historic Places, founded by Arizona's first Congresswoman, Isabella Greenway, the Arizona Inn provides an historic backdrop for your next special event. Arizona Inn is the perfect setting for weddings, anniversary celebrations, or your next business meeting. And you can make your reservations online at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn, luxury and elegance in the heart of Tucson.
Sarnoff Artist Materials is your one-stop store for fine and graphic artist supplies, framing, stationery, and Mont Blanc and other top-of-the-line writing instruments. Order online at sarnoffart.com or visit owner-operator Henry Sarnoff and his store staffed by artists, for artists, and those who seek the finest quality in everything art-related. Sarnoff Artist Materials, 2504 North Campbell, three blocks north of Grant, and always at sarnoffart.com.
Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero More, Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza, topped with the finest, freshest quality ingredients. Enjoy casual yet upscale dining while sampling our extensive boutique wine list. Vero More in Tucson at North Swan and Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at ferroamorepizza.com. And coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastropub.
Let Karimi Oriental Rugs keep your valuable area rugs looking like new with Tucson's finest cleaning, repair, and restoration services. Karimi specializes in restoring antique, silk, and Navajo rugs with 100% satisfaction guarantee. Karimi Oriental Rugs appraises and purchases quality rugs and offers a vast selection of hand-woven rugs from around the world. Be sure to stop by Karimi Oriental Rugs at Fort Lowell and Dodge or on the web at KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our citizens realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and create a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in and support of education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's Pima Community College students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a literate, prosperous, thriving Tucson and Pima County. During these extraordinarily tough times, our funding is in serious jeopardy. And as budgets get even tighter, we'll have to cut back services just when people need us the most. So please support us in our ongoing effort to build a better tomorrow. Help us provide the education and resources that the people of Pima County need today. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us on the web at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
Imagine a jewelry store that is both sophisticated and organic, where Tucson's rich cultural heritage mingles with contemporary design. We invite you to Veer Jewelers, where our commitment to customer service is surpassed only by our reputation for creating inspired custom jewelry that is as unique as our customers. At Veer Jewelers, you are warmly welcomed, whether you are bringing in an heirloom for repair or design, replacing a watch battery, or shopping for a special gift. Visit our unique showroom, centrally located on Campbell, just north of Grant, or visit our website at veerjewelers.com. Veer Jewelers, Tucson's trusted jeweler for more than 25 years.
It's the Buckmaster Show. It's 23 and a half minutes past the hour. I am Bill Buckmaster. The board of the Greater Vail, Arizona Area Chamber of Commerce, whose 100 members include Rosemont Copper and the leading group opposed to Rosemont Copper, save the scenic Santa Rita's, have voted 6-0 not to endorse or oppose the mine. Joining us on the Buckmaster Show is Rod Pace. Mr. Pace is president and CEO of Rosemont Copper, which is proposing an open pit mine that would extract 220 million pounds of copper a year and employ 400 people on private and public land in the Santa Rita Mountains, about 30 miles southeast of Tucson. Mr. Pace, thanks for being with us.
Hello, Bill, and thank you for having me on the show.
What was your reaction to that vote by the Vail Chamber?
You know, I was very pleased, actually, because in their vote, they also said their mission was to support all their members and promote business, which is exactly what a chamber should do. So by the vote, I think they did show very strong support for the Rosemont project.
Where are we right now as far as you're concerned with the project?
You know, right now the project's all the major permits have been, the applications have been submitted, and we have a couple key permits right now that we're waiting to come out. Probably the biggest one is in draft environmental impact statement. We expect that it'll be out to the public in the second quarter of this year. And then there'll be a series of probably 90 days of public comments on it. And so the public will be allowed to take a look at what the Forest Service has proposed and make comments on it.
Are you optimistic still that this is going to happen?
Oh, very optimistic. If you look at the business support, the public support, you know, if you look at this project as a whole, not what it just brings to this local economy, but also the state of Arizona and the United States, it's a huge economic boost to this area. And one thing that we're very proud of, the whole design of this project has been, how do we design a mine today that will minimize environmental impacts using the latest technology? And if anybody takes a hard look at what we've done, I think they'll find that it's a model to follow.
The Save the Santa Rita group says we can't afford to use the water that your mine would use. What do you say to them?
I'd say to them that we are probably the first mining project that has ever proposed to be neutral on water use, to put back into the groundwater the water we use. I don't think you'll find any other mining company that has proposed that as a working plan.
It's 26 minutes past the hour on the Buckmaster Show. Rod Pace is the CEO and president of Rosemont Copper. There are some environmental hurdles you said you've applied. Are there? Is it about six more permits? Is that what you really need? Is that what you're looking at?
Well, you'd have six major ones, okay? If you look at the major ones, you have the air permit, you have the EIS with the federal, you have aquifer permits, you have a series of other permits, but there's about six major ones, and there's smaller ones too, like blasting permits, and which are just statutory permits to get.
How have the tours gone of the mine, the proposed mine site?
We've had tremendous support on the tours. We have our tours right now is 2 to 3 months booked ahead of time. We have a lot of special tours we're putting on for groups that ask for private tours in between those. So we're doing, I'd say on average, we probably have 5 or 6 tours a week that come up to the site that are interested in learning about the project.
There was some controversy over a mailer that you all sent to many of the, I think it was many folks in the foothills received it. Why did you do that? Why was that sent out?
Well, again, Bill, one of the things about this project we found from the early stages, the opposition has put out a lot of misinformation on this mine. And all we're asking the public to do is part of it is trying to get the information out to them, have them come take a site visit, see what we're doing. We're not asking them that they have to, if they don't want to agree with the project, that's fine, but at least get the information out there. And that's the effort we put out with the letter.
Give us what you think are the major points as far as misinformation, Mr. Pace.
Well, number one is misinformation is that all mines are going to look the same. That's completely false. I mean, if you look at what we've done as far as a landform design, look at what we've done with that mine, it's completely different than the mines you see if you drive down like I-19. You'll be able to start from the very beginning of this project and design it the way we think it should be. Number two, probably the biggest one, is that is we're going to pollute the water. I mean, we are in a limestone formation. We've done many, many geochemistry tests, and all the geochemistry tests show that the water we're done will be very similar to the groundwater. Number three is we're going to dry up all the water on the west side of Santa Rita. That's completely false also. We're bringing our water from the west side where we can recharge water, replace it. We're in a limestone rock formation where we'll be mining, where there's fracture zones there that have, you know, we have very little water on that side, so we're not going to be affecting the water on that side, very little effect.
What do you think of that model that Pima County developed of what the site was going to look like? Do you think it's accurate?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say I'm kind of disappointed being a taxpayer that they're spending money, taxpayer money on that. It's pretty premature in my effect because until a draft ES comes out, we don't even know for sure what alternative the Forest Service is going to select as a preferred alternative. So I think it should have at least waited till the Forest Service had put out a draft ES. Secondly, what they presented there, what we have in the what's called the mine plan operation currently, it shows that, hey, the mine...
Oh, we lost Mr. Pace. I am so sorry. Mr. Pace, thank you very much for being with us talking about Rosemont Mine. We are out of time because we're going up against a hard break at the bottom of the hour. We will be right back with the spokesman for the Border Patrol.
Tucson's Jolt.
Tucson's Jolt.
KJLL, South Tucson.
CNN Radio, I'm Bill Caiaccio. One person died and at least 50 were hurt in a bombing in Jerusalem. CNN's Kevin Flower tells us it happened during the evening rush hour.
This explosion has happened right near the central bus station on a road that runs sort of across the street from it at a very busy time of the day here in central Jerusalem. People leaving their jobs, going back home.
There is fierce fighting reported between pro and anti-Gaddafi forces in parts of eastern Libya today. France's foreign minister says NATO will not take over leadership of the military mission in Libya. Elizabeth Taylor died today. She had been having heart problems for years. She starred in many movies early in her career, but was more involved in charity later in life. Taylor was 79. Sales of new homes took a dive in February. The government reports a drop of almost 17% for the month. The most trusted name in news. This is CNN Radio.
People come to Ruth's Chris for more than just a great steak. They come to let off some steam. Take Rob, Joe, and Shelley. When they get wrapped up in a week-long assignment at work, they head on over to Ruth's Chris for a much-needed break over some sizzling steak served to perfection. It's a chance for them to loosen up, have a few laughs, and talk about anything. Anything but work, that is. Ruth's Chris Steakhouse, serving more than just sizzling steaks.
I'm Rocky Moselle with StarRegistry.com. Since we were children, we've been told to reach for the stars. It was great advice, now it's a great gift. Name a star after someone. For $54 and a call to 800-282-3333 or visit StarRegistry.com, we will name a star after someone very special to you and send an incredible personalized gift. The new star name will be recorded in book form in the U.S. Copyright Office. Call the Star Registry, 800-282-3333 or visit StarRegistry.com for the hottest gift.
I just opened my third doggy daycare. My business is growing by leaps and bounds. My marketing is deluxe.
I'm hiring drivers for my shuttle service. My business is picking up. My marketing is deluxe.
I care for 52 lawns. My business is growing. My marketing is deluxe.
Use deluxe online marketing tools to help your business grow. Deluxe for business.
Deluxe for my business.
For my business.
For my business.
Deluxe for business. Visit deluxe.com/marketing.
Listed on the National Register of Historic Places and founded by Isabella Greenway, Arizona's first congresswoman, the Arizona Inn is still the standard bearer for luxury hospitality in Midtown Tucson, just minutes from the University of Arizona. Founded in 1930, the Arizona Inn continues to win top honors for hospitality and dining. Travel and Leisure magazine names the Arizona Inn one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. And the Arizona Inn is proud of its AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room. Whether it's for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or a private event, you can count on Chef Allison's featured seasonal culinary creations to please. The Arizona Inn, a special oasis of hospitality in Midtown Tucson, 2200 East Elm, and on the web at arizonainn.com.
With 30 projects under construction, including work at La Cañada Drive and the First Avenue bus pullouts, the Regional Transportation Authority is delivering our promise to you already. RTA has completed 174 projects, including 5 major roadways, and launched transit services like Sun Express and Sun Shuttle. Your tax dollars are creating jobs and making travel around our region faster and safer. Please be careful of workers in those areas and obey all traffic signs. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
Vero Amore presents Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza using fresh homemade mozzarella and the finest quality toppings. Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero Amore, casual yet upscale dining with an extensive boutique wine list. Vero Amore in Tucson at North Swan and Cap Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastro pub.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tancredi, at the southwest corner of Tancredi and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Nell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tancredi, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery on the corner of Tancredi and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
It is 36 minutes past the hour on the Buckmaster Show. I am Bill Buckmaster on KJLL AM 1330 and always on our fine website, www.buckmastershow.com. It is the start of the deadly time of year in the southern Arizona desert as temperatures are starting to climb, making it very treacherous for border crossers. Joining us on the Buckmaster Show is Mario Escalante. Mr. Escalante is a spokesman for the Border Patrol here in Tucson. Mr. Escalante, thanks for being with us.
Bill, thank you for having us.
Tell me about what the Border Patrol is doing to gear up for this very, which often is a very deadly time of year.
Well, we're doing a number of things, and I'm glad you ask. Even though the summertime is coming, and it is a very dangerous time of the year for some of the folks that are attempting to traverse. It's still, you know, it's dangerous year round, Bill. In reality,
yeah. The gentleman from Humane No More Deaths was on our program last week, and he was saying that even the winter time with the exposure is a deadly time of year. So it's really a deadly time of year all year round in the southern Arizona desert.
That's correct. I mean, the Sonoran Desert is not very forgiving if you're not prepared for what's out there, and it might look beautiful, but once you're in the middle of it, it becomes a very dangerous, remote, desolate area in some of the parts of the Sonoran Desert. But you know, just briefly to give you an idea of what we're doing, aside from, you know, our operational enhancements, of course, is the overall attempt to better educate and communicate the dangers. You know, that's foremost our primary goal, is to be able to reach, you know, folks into the southern parts of Mexico and into the interior so that they know the dangers that are out there and that they understand that, you know, it is dangerous year round.
How do you get the word out to these people, Mario?
Well, one of the things that we've done in the past is obviously work with, you know, local stations, radio stations, the Mexican consulate, obviously. But here lately, what we've been doing is we've been reaching out to radio stations out in those interior states that we know have that, you know, ability to communicate and give the message so that they can help us. And we know that most of the folks in the interior really listen more to the radio so than possibly have the opportunity to read a newspaper or have a TV available to them to watch on TV those dangers. And of course, you know, we continue to educate those that we apprehend so that they see the dangers of crossing. Most of our apprehensions do occur within 25 miles, 90% of them within 5 miles of the border. But, you know, the thing that we want to educate people as well is that there's still dangers south of the border. So we also want to make sure that, you know, people understand that it's overall dangerous. And, you know, operationally, we're preparing, of course, our BORSTAR, which most folks are familiar with, which is the Border Patrol Search, Rescue, and Trauma Team. We're enhancing their ability, providing more of their agents, and looking at areas where we probably need to deploy the resource of BORSTAR adequately and be prepared to mitigate. But I think that's what's important for most folks to learn, is that operationally what we're trying to do is impact the transnational criminal organizations that operate in this area, because it is them that are trying to profit off of bringing people in illegally. And if we can deny what they're doing and disrupt their efforts, then the less people who cross is the less people who are in danger.
These are the human, the people that are handling the human smuggling are bringing people across. And there was a large group, I think it was over by Ajo, some 90 people were arrested recently. That's unusual these days, isn't it? Bringing a group that large across?
It is. Yeah. It is unusual, but nothing that we haven't seen before. And again, you know, having that awareness and having that prior knowledge prepares us better. But at the same time, you know, these criminal organizations, they're not mom and pop anymore. They're, you know, it's a very lucrative business. So they're trying to operate in ways that they'll make substantial profits.
There was a $100 million seizure in drugs and guns south of Tucson here recently. Are you seeing, though, generally smaller loads of, say, marijuana and more of the harder drugs coming across the border in smaller amounts, perhaps?
Well, I mean, we're seeing a variety. This is not something new, and this is not something that we're not prepared for. But obviously, you know, it is a good indicator of what we're doing, that what we're doing is being effective, because, you know, obviously these harder drugs in smaller amounts are still, you know, as profitable or even more profitable than if they attempt to bring in, you know, larger loads per se of marijuana or even, you know, smuggling in people. But, you know, we're prepared to identify any of their new tactics or whatever tactics they try. And, I mean, the checkpoints are a great source of us having that defense in depth that we call, so that we can, you know, whatever doesn't, whatever's not apprehended near the border, we're able to still mitigate in routes of egress, such as interstates or state routes.
You think the Border Patrol generally gets a bad rap from the public, or how do you view that?
Well, I think it's all about education, and, you know, that's one of the reasons why we love doing shows like yourself.
Thank
and,
you.
You know, any other show that allows us the opportunity to explain to the public and educate the public as to what our goals are and what we need to accomplish those goals.
Tell me about yourself. Why did you choose this career, and are the Border Patrol still hiring folks?
Currently, we're not hiring at this time, but, you know, we did just have a big surge of hiring. But, you know, for me, the Border Patrol was just a way of just bringing in two of the things that I love the most, which is outdoors and being able to, you know, provide safety to the public. I wanted to be a cop since I was a kid, and, you know, I'm a big outdoorsman, so, you know, you get the best of two.
So the Border Patrol right now did have a big push hiring people, but your staffing levels are where you want them to be then? Is that what you're saying?
Well, we have to look at what the activity is, and like everything we do is know what kind of resources we have and deploy those resources adequately. I mean, personnel is important to us, but there are other factors that we bring in to be able to be, you know, operationally driven, and that's, of course, the infrastructure, having the infrastructure and having technology. Technology enhances the ability and augments our enforcement as well. So we have to also think of those things. So it's a variety.
You know, I have to ask you what the no more deaths were. People, they were saying that the Border Patrol is in effect forcing the crossers into the most dangerous parts of the desert. What do you say to those people when you hear that criticism?
Well, and I think we go back to the whole education, and, you know, we're targeting transnational criminal organizations because they're really the ones that are taking or driving people to some of the more remote locations so that they can be successful and they could gain and profit from it.
How are the what are your numbers looking like as far as apprehensions?
You know, if you look at our numbers in comparison to last year in 2010, we finished our apprehensions over 212,000. In compared to fiscal year 2009, we were probably over 241,000 apprehensions. This current year, you know, obviously we're still within fiscal year of 2011. We're looking at maybe half of what we were at the same time frame last year.
And why do you think that is? What's going on?
Well, we'd like to think that, again, it's, you know, the what we're doing operationally, and that's, again, deploying these resources and, you know, communicating to the people what we're doing. And one of the other things that we've added to the infrastructure, manpower, and technology is, you know, impact programs, consequences. You know, we're adding consequences to the people that we apprehend so that they understand that, you know, if they get apprehended, there's going to be a consequence behind that.
Mario Escalante, thank you very much for being with us on the Buckmaster Show.
Thank you very much, Bill, for having us.
Thanks a lot. It's coming up on 45 minutes past the hour. We're going to be talking about political redistricting with political pollster Dr. Margaret Kensky next on the Buckmaster Show.
Sarnoff Artist Materials is Tucson's award-winning destination for everything art-related, including fine and graphic artist supplies, framing, stationery, and the world's best writing instruments. Visit owner-operator artist Henry Sarnoff at 2504 North Campbell, 3 blocks north of Grant, and always at the easy-to-navigate website sarnoffart.com. Because it takes an artist to know an artist's needs.
From antique to contemporary, Persia to Pakistan, Tibet to Turkey, Karimi Oriental Rugs brings the world to Tucson at the corner of East Fort Lowell and Dodge. Owner-operator Amir Karimi personally selects the world's finest exquisite hand-woven rugs. Sale, purchase, wash, repair, restore, and appraise. East Fort Lowell and Dodge for Karimi Oriental Rugs and KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
Tucson's Regional Transportation Authority uses your tax dollars to create jobs and make local travel faster and safer. Transit services like Sun Express and Sun Shuttle and the completion of five major roadways are examples of how RTA is delivering on our promises to you. With 174 projects completed and 30 under construction, such as the First Avenue bus pullouts and La Canada Drive, RTA wants to remind you to be careful of road workers and to obey all traffic signs. RTA, delivering our promises to you.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinka Verde, at the southwest corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Nell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tinka Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery, on the corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
It's 48 minutes past the hour. I am Bill Buckmaster on The Buckmaster Show. The Independent Redistricting Commission is set to take care of some housekeeping items at its first meeting tomorrow. The commission is charged with redrawing legislative and congressional district lines using new population information from the U.S. Census Bureau. It is a very big job for that five-member board. Three of the five members are from Pima County. With us on the Buckmaster Show live line is Dr. Margaret Kensky, political pollster and a very good friend to the Buckmaster Show. Margaret, how are you doing?
Doing fine, Bill. So nice to be on the show.
Well, we're delighted to have you on the show. This is a huge job, this redistricting commission. Oh, my goodness.
10-year term.
Yeah, how in the world are they ever going to get this right? And I suppose they'll never get it right in 100% of the people's eyes.
Well, you know, it's because they're conflicting objectives that are pursued and that are actually required under law, federal law, that make it, and federal court cases that make it quite difficult. You can't just divide it up on a geo basis. We have about 6.3 million people in Arizona, and so it's likely that we'll have a ninth congressional district. And it's estimated we need 710,000 persons living in each of those districts. And that's the simple part. The difficult part is the requirements that minorities be fairly represented so that they have a chance to elect minority representatives from some of those districts. Largest group would be the Hispanic population, of course, which is now about 30% of our population, with about 1.9 million Hispanics. And, you know, Bill, in the past, as you well know, the Justice Department rules said that at a minimum you had to have 55% of a congressional district minority to ensure that there was a fair chance for a minority group member to be elected.
Well, it just seems that this is a monumental task.
Oh, it is.
I mean, how do you get it right? Or why not? People have asked me why not have a computer draw up these these.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
Yes, and actually, there are programs that do that, but it isn't quite so simple because, well, just a couple things. The second criteria that the Justice Department uses is to keep communities of interest intact. Is Green Valley a community of interest? is, you know, you can go on down the line. Are the Catalina foothills a community of interest? It becomes rather difficult. But, and for example, there have been problems in the past. The Hopi and Navajo, who have a history of a long dispute over land, don't want to be in the same district. In the past, they haven't. And so all of that has to be factored in. It's quite a computer program.
Yeah, it would be.
And then the third criteria is the districts would be competitive on partisan grounds. And this is the problem. That's the lower-ranked criterion. But if you're going to try to give minorities, particularly the largest minority, which would be Hispanics, and, of course, the Native Americans, too, have to factor into this, since they're overwhelmingly Democratic, that means that the districts are not going to be as competitive as if we just had the, you know, computer drawing things on the basis of geographic concern.
Let's switch, Margaret Kensky, to the upcoming Senate race now that Senator Kyle has decided he will not be seeking another term.
Right.
How do you see that race shaping up?
Well, first of all, open seat races are always fascinating. The conventional wisdom is, of course, that Republicans would have an edge because of, you know, Maricopa County is 60% of the vote, etc. But we do, depending on the climate of the times, elect statewide Democrats. Janet Napolitano comes to mind. I would say the times seem to be favoring the Republicans right now. But no Republican is as well known statewide, and neither is any Democrat who's been mentioned so far. So a lot of this will depend upon, you know, what's happening next year, the state of the economy. Just as President Bush, it was felt in 2006, his lack of popularity turned a lot of voters off for the Republicans. And then, of course, we had 2010 Obama's policies turning off many in the independent group, because that was the big swing group. That could happen again. So again, it's multifactorial. But let's say things look like they should be great for the Republicans. If it's not a Republican, you know, emerging from the primary process that people relate to, then it would all depend on who they were running against from the Democratic side.
Margaret, we began today's program talking about all-male voting that looks like the city of Tucson is going in that
mm-hmm.
direction.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of your thoughts on all-male elections?
Well, it's certainly been successful in Oregon and Washington. It can delay outcomes substantially, and I think there is a slightly increased chance of voter fraud. Because a mail-in ballot, you know, I was still getting them for my mother 2 years after she died. You know, I guess I could have filled them out if I were feloniously intended. I wasn't, but you know what it is.
Yeah.
So there are those possibilities for it. In terms of efficiency, less expense for running the elections, I think that part is a good idea. The town of Oro Valley does it for their city, you know, their town elections. And I've not heard any real complaints about it. So
we're talking with Margaret Kensky, political pollster, on the Buckmaster Show, coming up on 55 minutes past the hour. I had the pleasure of hosting a panel discussion on civility at the University of Arizona. Your now famous daughter...
Yes.
Dr. Kate Kensky of the University of Arizona was one of the panelists, and we were talking about this whole issue of civility in politics. Is there such a thing, civility in politics, or is that an oxymoron?
You know, occasionally you see a race where people are relatively polite to one another. They disagree on issues.
How rare is that?
Well, it actually has become more rare, and I think, speaking of our daughter, Kate, Dr. Kensky, she has pointed out that one of the concerns that she personally has is that if she looks at the data, some of the more negative, nasty races actually have higher voter turnout than the nice ones.
And that's probably why they're nasty, why you have this negative campaigning, because it seems to get people energized.
Well, it does, but that means people are responding emotionally to personal stuff rather than using their minds to weigh the issues. And that's unfortunate. As Kate would say, it's an unfortunate comment on human nature, but there we have it. I think there's certainly the whole idea behind the Civility Project is to figure out a way to get people engaged and civil at the same time. That would be our hope.
But going back to negative campaigning, I mean, there is a reason why you see 90 or 95% of campaigns going negative, isn't there?
That's right. That's right. And I think it's important. I mean, my husband, Hank Kensky, wrote a book about this 25 years ago, and, you know, it does work. 95, they do work. They are negative. I think it's important to make a distinction, though, between the ones that involve personal attacks and those that are just saying, you know, his or her policies are dreadful. They do X, Y, and Z, which to me can be a fair comment if you fairly, you know, if you honestly believe that, or just saying so-and-so isn't doing his job. He didn't do, you know, he didn't act in a timely fashion to, you know, deal with this problem in a typical attack on an incumbent. Or, you know, if, you know, but I think there should be a factual basis for it, or, you know, a values basis for it, not just these personal attacks, which I find really repugnant.
We had Jonathan Payton on our program yesterday, first time we've talked to him since the election. What went wrong in that election with his battle with Jesse Kelly? What went wrong for Mr. Payton?
Well, I think Mr. Kelly had been working at it longer. Jonathan came in later. I think that Jesse Kelly appealed to a more intense activist within the political party, and they felt that he would better represent their interests. He was, you know, it's easy to use these terms more farther to the right, et cetera, et cetera. But he obviously took very strong positions on economic issues, wanted to abolish the Department of Education, and on and so forth. And I think Jonathan was a bit more moderate on those things.
Yeah, final comment on who you do see as the front runner right now in that race for Kyle's seat.
Oh, well, the only declared candidate, of course, is Jeff Flake.
How about Russell Pierce?
Oh, my. Well, I think he would certainly have some sway from Maricopa Republicans, but he certainly will not get a great deal of support from the business community.
Margaret Kensky, you got to run. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Bill.
Okay, political pollster Margaret Kensky on the Buckmaster Show. Buckmaster Show brought to you in part by Flowers, Rieger, and Associates Certified Public Accountants, located at 2919 East Broadway. I am Bill Buckmaster. Hope to see you here tomorrow. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Something on your mind?
The time has come for all of us to speak out.
Call in and let us know.
Now start talking.
Talk about how you feel.
KJLL, South Tucson.